Welcome back to the Wake Up Podcast. I am really grateful to be talking about this with you guys today. This has been a long time in the making. I feel like I've been thinking about doing these kind of episodes for years, even back when I had the Boss Up Podcast, which was really just business focused. I just knew one day that these kind of episodes were coming. I knew that I would be talking about stuff that was of substance outside of just business. I love business. I love working. I could busy myself with work for the rest of my life and feel like I was happy. But I also know too much. If you guys have read Wake Up, which is the book that I most recently wrote, I talk about the importance of the six cornerstones. And if you listen to last week's episode of the Wake Up Podcast, I talked about how I'm starting to believe that all of the other five cornerstones filter through the spiritual cornerstone, that it's more than a cornerstone, that it's like the trunk of a tree that gets information from the leaves and send it down to the roots, and then the roots send information up to the leaves, and it all filters through this spiritual cornerstone somehow. I'm seeing it in my meditations and in my visions as a tree. And so I just feel like there's something here, and I want to talk about this kind of substance. I want to talk about everything from the way that we parent, the way we live in relationship with each other, to our health and our spirituality. I don't want to leave out business and finance because I think they're important. And so I want to be able to talk about the breadth of all of those things. I want to not just pigeonhole myself into one topic, because I am bigger than that. And I feel like if I'm going to be sharing authentically and honestly with you guys, I want to talk about the things that I'm doing and I'm working through and I'm moving through. And psychedelics was part of that last year. The thing about psychedelics is that it's like trying to explain a dream. You ever had the weirdest dream of your life and you turn over and you're like excited to kind of tell somebody about it because it's so wild. You're just like, this is so off the wall. And you start to explain it and you realize that you sound crazy. That the words just don't exist to fully explain what it was that you just experienced, because the words sound off. Words don't have the capacity to give you the experience. They can just point you to the experience, or they can actually just point you to what the experience was not. I find that words more often can explain what something was not rather than explain what something is. And so I'm going to do my best to put some words onto some concepts today that I felt like I experienced during ketamine, which was what I did before ayahuasca last year, that don't seem to have a lot of words. I'm going to do my best. I am hoping to give you as much of this experience as possible, short of having me go in there and sit with you while you do it. And I'm going to do that through telling you my story. I'm going to tell you my experience with it. I have Liz here today. She's going to ask some questions because I just found that this kind of information is best shared in conversational style, where she can kind of lead the conversation with questions that you guys might also have, where I kind of get lost in what order these things happen in because they feel dreamlike. So I'm going to let Liz ask some questions today. I'm going to do my best to give you a comprehensive look behind the curtain of what it felt like to do three sessions of ketamine last spring. I hope that I will open your eyes a little bit, perhaps put something new on the radar for you, but at least take some of the mystery out of psychedelics and ketamine in particular. So with that, Liz, let's have your first question.
All right, let's start from the beginning. So I know you were pretty scared to do this, and I know, and anyone who knows you, that you do everything in life scared. You do it. You do it whether you like it or not. It's something I respect about you, honestly. So between the time that you booked your ketamine and, you know, let's say the week leading up to it, what was the prep like emotionally and physically? And did you have any intentions besides just wanting to surrender control of your body in a safe way, just so you, you know, could see how that felt? Was there anything else that you wanted to get out of this?
Yeah. So Liz is right. I was really, really scared. The reason that I even thought about ketamine in the first place was because about 10 minutes after I had booked our ayahuasca session, it was just one day random in December, I decided this is never going to happen unless I do it. This is up to me. Like, I just had this awareness that in order for me to face this thing, I was going to have to rip the Band-Aid off somehow. And one thing that I will do is, even when I'm scared, I will rip the Band-Aid off. Now, is that always the right choice? No, it is not. There have been multiple times in my life where I have ripped the Band-Aid off without fully thinking through anything. And then I find myself kind of lost. I find myself having hurt other people. I find myself inadvertently hurting myself because I didn't fully think through what I just decided. Oh, even though I feel this scared feeling, I'm just going to go ahead and do it anyway. I do that, I think, because that's the way that I learn the best. I learn by trying on. So I'm not one of those people that learns the best by taking other people's advice and sitting around and mulling through all the options. I tend to be one of those people that has to learn through doing. I learn by having the experience in the first place. And so oftentimes I do that just to kind of shove myself through the door, knowing I'm going to walk through this door eventually. I might as well just do it now. And that tends to be the case. When I follow my gut, I usually am doing something in the present that I'm most likely to put off for a while. And so I try to just rip that Band-Aid off. And this is one of those things. I ripped off the Band-Aid, decided to just pay for the trip. It's non-refundable. There's nothing I can do to get this money back. I will face ayahuasca. I'm going to meet her this year. It was about 10 minutes after that when I went, oh my God, what did I just do? I have never been out of control of my body like this. And I'm about to put myself through 4 ceremonies of ayahuasca where I have no control. I'm talking about like no control, like eyes open, seeing something different than I've ever seen before. Now, I realize that what I'm fearful of is my own mind. I know that the fear is inside of me, that it's not outside of me, that I am fearful of something that I already know, that I'm fully aware of, that my soul understands, that God understands, but I have not seen or experienced before. And that thought is scary. There are people that come back from ayahuasca and say it was the scariest, worst thing they've ever done. There are people that come back and say it was the best thing that they've ever done. Either way, I had signed up for it. I knew it was going to happen. I knew that it was calling to me. I knew I was supposed to do it. But I was really afraid to block myself from having a full experience during ayahuasca because I didn't know how to let myself go, how to give control of my body away. I am one of those people that has always been in control of my own body. I don't drink to excess. In fact, in the last few years, I haven't had more than, I don't know, 10 drinks, maybe. I just don't drink that much anymore. I never have drank that much, even in college when I was drinking just to experiment with how does this feel? And this is what socially everyone is doing. And this is what I'm going to do too, because I want to fit in. I wasn't drinking to excess where I blacked out. I've never not remembered the night before when I drank. And I'm not judging you if you do that. We're different people. I have always felt like my responsibility to myself is to be able to be in control of my body at all times so that if somebody wants to take advantage of that, I have my faculties about me, right? It's like my concealed carry is to constantly be in control of my own body. And during ayahuasca, there is a good chance I will not have that ability. I will not have the ability to control what I do, see, feel, think, behave, respond, any of that. And I wanted kind of a midterm interim option to teach me what it felt like to give up control of my body in that way, to be able to completely release into the experience without worrying about my body. And I don't know where this comes from. It might come from past events. It might be handed down to me through millions of years of conditioning as a female. There is likely sexual trauma in my family line. And I think that stuff doesn't go away. I think those things stay in us biologically so that we can adapt and so that I will have the best chance to survive. My DNA holds on to these past traumas of people that came before me so that I can be warned, hey, this might happen to you. And I always had it in my mind that it was up to me to protect myself in that way. And now I'm signing up to willfully kind of lay that down for a time. Now, I was really, really into research and finding the place that was going to be the safest for me so that I didn't have to worry about that. But still, the worry lingered. The fear lingered about me not being able to fully let go. So I was kind of thinking, like, what would be the next option for me? What could be something that I could do between signing up for ayahuasca and the actual event of doing the ceremonies that would kind of give me the experience of letting go a little bit? And the answer found me in the form of one of the nurses that came to my house that did my IV on me. And if you don't know, go back and listen to the previous episode and I'll tell you all about how I got introduced to ketamine. It came to me and I felt like, okay, this is the answer. This is the answer. God is giving me the answer right now. I'm going to follow this. And so I called and made my appointment with Enlighten Wellness, Dr. Sandy Indermule in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I just want to tell you up front, 5 stars. Highly recommend. I wouldn't go anywhere else for ketamine at this point. I would fly to Arizona to do ketamine with Sandy and Troy and the team that they have there. Like, really beautiful people. That team understood how to make me feel comfortable, how to hold space for me, how to support me through this. And Dr. Indermule continued to text me throughout last year to ask me how ayahuasca went, to follow up with me. I don't remember the last doctor that I had that did that, that actually cared about me, Lindsay, the soul, the human being, the spirit. I felt like she was taking care of all of me, not just the part of me that was gonna pay her money to, you know, do this thing for me. She actually cared about my experience here because she wants other people to also experience all that life can give us. And I felt that like connection with her and with her team, and that's exactly what I got. 5 stars, highly recommend. So yeah, I was scared. I even talked to Liz a little bit about it before I went in. I remember talking to her and Adam, like, what the fuck am I doing? I am so freaked out. Like, what am I going to see? What's this going to feel like? Am I going to freak out when I'm in there? I'm going to have a fucking heart attack. Like, what is going to happen to me? And so I knew that ketamine was for me because I had this feeling of fear mixed with curiosity. What's it going to be? And like I would start to shake just thinking about it. And so I was really, really nervous going in, but I decided to just do it anyway. I was going to have this experience because I wasn't prepared for what ayahuasca was going to bring to me yet. I knew I had to have this experience first, which is why I went and did ketamine in the first place. So let me tell you a little bit about what was it like emotionally and physically leading up to that week. It was scary. But the great thing is the prep for ketamine is not as intense as the prep for ayahuasca, which I'll talk to you guys about next time. So there were a few things that you need to do to prep for ketamine. They were things like, hey, be careful about the kind of food that you're putting into your body, right? Because our food affects our energy, which is going to affect everything that you think about, experience, all of that kind of stuff. So be careful, eat some really good, clean foods. No doing other psychedelics. So no smoking weed. I wasn't drinking anything, of course. I wasn't going to do mushrooms. I'm not doing any other psychedelics the day before you go in to do ketamine. It's also about prepping your mind. So being mindful about what it is that you are allowing your mind to see. I love a good doom scroll every so often. Not different than you guys are. But there was no doom scrolling the day before ketamine because, again, what you put into your mind affects your energy, and that will affect what you feel during ketamine. Of course it will. I wasn't interested in going in there to have a terrifying experience. I was interested in going in there and having a beautiful experience. And so I was really careful about what I saw, what I did. I listened to really soft music. I kind of gave myself the day to just relax and not get super stressed about anything. Anything that came my way to be stressed about, I kind of just laid it down and let it go. I said, this is going to be here the day after as well. I don't need to deal with this now. So I just kind of had a really calm day. I meditated a lot. I listened to calm music and I allowed myself a day to just prepare myself, feel the feelings of fear that were clearly coming up for me and just accept them. I was just trying to accept them, to let go so that I could then let go during ceremony. And so that's kind of what the day before was like. The morning of, you don't eat any food, right? Because it has a tendency to make you sick to your stomach. I wasn't interested in puking while I was doing that. The purge is for ayahuasca. I was not interested in having the purge happen during ketamine, which can happen. So I didn't eat in the morning. You don't drink anything. They give you, like Sandy was so great about having a nice cold water bottle of Sedona water for me when I got done so that I could just like drink my weight in water and then go home and rest. So the prep really was kind of nice, actually, like a forced break from everything that raises my cortisol levels. Everything that makes me stressed out, I kind of laid down the day before ketamine so that I could have just concentrated on having a really nice experience during ketamine. So I'm actually just going to read you my intentions directly out of my journal. My intentions for my first ketamine medicine journey tomorrow. Number one, to surrender. And so my mantra around this was, I am willing to surrender. I am willing to surrender to the experience. I have trained doctors around me who are going to watch over me, who are going to make sure that I'm safe. If something goes wrong, I trust that they can handle it. This is why I have hired them to do this in the first place. I intend to fully surrender to this experience and go in with an open, curious mind. Even if it's fearful, I'm going to go in open and curious. My second intention was to remember that I am worthy of insight. Whatever I see in here, whatever I experience in here, I'm worthy of the insight that it's going to give to me so that I can use that towards whatever end this is. I don't even know what the end of this is. I don't know what comes at the end of this. This is really like a door with nothing behind it where I'm just going to fall off the cliff and see what happens on the way down. But I wanted to remember that I'm worthy of any insight that I get. Nothing that I've done in the past, nothing that I have chosen, nothing that I have will do in the future disqualifies me from having insight about my life in this way. Even if it's different than what other people would choose, nothing is disqualifying me from having insight from this experience that I am willingly choosing. And then finally, I wanted to remember that all of the answers are within me. I don't need anything outside of myself. All of the answers are here. I wanted to remember what my soul already knows. I believe that my soul is a fully actualized, intelligent being of love and light that remembers everything that happened before I came into this life and had amnesia. There is a whole treasure trove of knowledge, I think, that's within me. It's just I have to remember it. And so I really wanted to feel like I remembered that everything is inside of me. I'm not going to see anything in here that I didn't already know. And it turns out that absolutely was the truth. So those were my three intentions and what I wanted to remember going in. And I think that's exactly what I got. I did surrender completely, and I was worthy of the insight that I got. I did get insights, and I did remember that all of the answers were inside of me because everything that I got or understood in there, I felt like I had already known. I was re-remembering it. I wasn't hearing it for the first time. And sometimes I feel like that in dreams too. Like I've seen this before. I've experienced this before. I've definitely felt that during weed sessions where I've had a bunch of weed. If I take like 100 milligrams out of nowhere, I'll have these experiences where like I'll remember things from when I was younger or feelings or experiences from when I was younger, and I'll re-remember them. And that just goes to prove to me that like all the answers are here. My mind has not forgotten all of this stuff that I have repressed just because I haven't recalled it. There's an opportunity here for me to remember. So those were my intentions going into the first one. I really just wanted the experience and to be curious rather than allow my fear to keep me small and stagnant and not moving forward.
Okay, so I want you to get into what happened during that first session, because I remember talking to you shortly after it, and spoiler alert, you said it wasn't scary at all. So that was comforting to hear for me and probably some people who are listening to this who are thinking that they may want to do this. They'll have to have the experience themselves, but you know, there you go. It wasn't scary. So tell us what the first session was like, what you remember about it, and you know, what you think was important to share about that.
Okay, so I do want to say that if you guys want an exact play-by-play where I actually read my journal that the nurses kept for me, I actually did that on my social media. If you go to my highlights, there's two ketamine highlights, one that's called ketamine, one that's called ketamine 2. really original. But in there, I actually go through and read everything that I did. So when you're under ketamine, there is a nurse that sits and watches everything that you do and writes down the exact time and what you did, what you said, how you moved, all of that kind of stuff. And then afterwards, as you're kind of coming back down, you just start talking and say everything that you saw, and they dictate word for word everything that you say on this journal. They give it to you to go home and then integrate however you choose to. So if you are looking for that kind of detail, that's available for you on my social media. Go find me at Lindsay Teague on Instagram, and it's in my highlights. Highly recommend you go over there and look at that. But I'm going to give you an overview, basically, of what happened during my first session. And Liz is right. It wasn't scary at all. And so I'll tell you kind of like what the process was and then what it felt like. So I had my assistant drive Michael and I to Scottsdale to the clinic. And while we were in the parking lot, we completely covered ourselves in every emotional oil that was available. Everything that I had, I covered myself. And actually in my stories, I'll give you a list of exactly what I used. So go check that out if you're interested in that. A whole bunch of emotional oils because I was so scared. You guys, I was so scared. So I covered myself in oils and then we kind of walk in, and I had this light in the stomach feeling, like kind of butterfly stomach feeling, like, oh, this could be excited. It could be scared. I'm not really sure. But the whole staff was so good and understanding and held so much space for us that they made it so comfortable. They had our mats set up for us. Michael and I got to do our sessions in the same room. So he was like right next to me. And they had these nice mats that were set up. It was like nice and comfortable. We kind of sat up a little bit. We had like these wedges that we kind of sat up a little bit on. And then they give you an eye cover, which is really comfortable and soft and big. So you can't see above the top and you can't see down the bottom, right? Sometimes you can see. These ones you can. It's a complete blackout. And then they also give you noise-canceling headphones set up with a entire playlist of songs that would kind of take us on a journey. And Michael listened to the same songs I did at the same time. And so they kind of give you your mask, they give you your headphones, and you kind of sit there for a minute, you go over your intentions, they write them down, they write down the amount of medicine that they give you. So when I first started my first dose of ketamine, I took 45 milligrams at 10:22 a.m. And then what happens is they tell you, okay, so we're going to give you this first dose. You're going to kind of take off and fly. And then as you start to feel yourself come back down, and I was like, am I even going to feel this? You definitely are going to feel it. As you start to come back down, you can raise your hand and get another dose. And we did it in like shot form in the arm. So the first shot they give you is in like the muscle of your arm. And then they come on the other side and do the other arm when you ask for a second dose. And I'll just give you guys the information now. In all three of my ketamine sessions, I ask for a second dose because it really is kind of like you get to flying where you're like, okay, something's going to start happening. And then all of a sudden it comes back down. Your body metabolizes it pretty quickly. It's about an hour experience, and that's with two shots. So I actually asked for my second shot here at 10:45. So the first one was at 10:22. The second one, the first session, was at 10:45. So, you know, like 20 minutes later, I'm asking for another one to go up again. So 45 milligrams for my first dose and then 50 milligrams for my second dose. Like they could see, okay, she's handling it well. Her vitals are good. I was being paid attention to the entire time. And so they gave me a second dose. So here are the things that I think are important to share. I'm actually going to read you an excerpt from my journal that I did the day after my first round. I said, Michael and I did our first rounds of ketamine on Monday. I felt a certain amount of peace before and definitely during. There was no fear. It just was. I wanted to dance the whole time. The music was really, really good. And actually, as I was getting ready to do this, record this podcast for the first time, this is the fifth time that I've recorded this exact podcast for different technical reasons, something different every single time. But here I am doing this the fifth time because as I was preparing to do it the first time, the first song that I heard in ketamine was in the background of a video on Instagram, and it took me right back to it. And so I knew, okay, today's the day I'm supposed to record about ketamine. And then for one reason or another, now I'm on my fifth time of recording this exact same episode, and I'm pushing through because I got that sign. Like I believe in the lack of coincidence in my life that much. I'm going to keep doing this until it works out, and then I will publish it. So I wanted to dance the whole time. The doctor wrote down every time I moved my body, every time I smiled, and it was a lot. So I'd gone back and read everything that I did during the ceremony, and over again, she writes, started smiling. I think it was just a get familiar session, but a few things stand out. Number one, at one point, I, as the soul, was using my mind as a tool rather than my informer. I asked myself factual questions. I was familiar with the answers given by my mind. Questions like, how did you get here? Oh, so you just talked to Shelley and you made an appointment and then you drove yourself here? It felt like a distant memory. I was not emotionally connected to the information that my mind was given. And this was really the first time that I feel like I used my mind as a proper tool. Like often when I ask questions of myself, or I want an answer to something, my mind will give me information in the form of a picture. I know a lot of people have an internal voice that speaks to them, and it's your voice, or maybe it's someone else's voice. My husband happens to hear a lot of them, so he has a lot of internal voices that give him information over the top of the other, which is why he has a really hard time in like a loud room, because his internal voices are also very, very loud. So I don't have that issue. That's not how I see the answers. My answers will come in the form of like a picture or a feeling picture almost. Like, all right, well, here's the end result. How does this feel, basically? And then I make my choices from there. And so it was really weird to ask myself questions and then the picture didn't appear to me. I had to kind of chase the answer by going back in time. And I remember it felt like my mind and my soul were confused to see each other. Like my soul was confused to find my consciousness in this part of my mind. Does that make sense? It was like surprising, like, wait, how did you get here? And then instead of the answer just coming, I had to go back and use my mind to find the answer. Okay, I drove here. Why did I drive here? Well, I made the appointment. Why did I make the appointment? Well, somebody told me about this. So all of these things aligned to get you here. Isn't that interesting? Not in a scary way, in just like a factual, interesting way, that my soul was asking me questions and then I was going to find the factual answer without any emotional connection to it at all. Really interesting. I felt at one point what it would feel like not to give a single fuck. I was no thing and I was not attached to anything. I felt the weight of other people's opinions and it felt like nothing. It felt really good to not give a fuck what anyone else thought or felt or wanted. I did not care at all. And I wrote free with about 17 E's. So in this one moment, I started trying on, okay, like, so I'm using my mind as a tool. Let me start to think about things, right? So I just felt like I was in this dark room that was really, really big. Like imagine the biggest library ever with these wooden bookshelves. And instead of having books to muffle the sound, it's empty, where you could hear a pin drop and echo off of the walls, right? Just like this giant room with nothing in it. But me, I was completely alone and I didn't feel scared. Like I was supposed to be there alone. I wasn't there with other people on purpose. So I started trying things on, like, what would this person think about this? And the answer I got was, this is not about them, first of all, and you actually don't care. None of that matters. All of the things that you think matter, none of this matters. Like you could have taken anything from me in this moment and I know that I would have been okay. I was totally free from identifying with anything outside of what is the true me at that moment. And that felt so good. And then I wrote, I was uncomfortable, unfamiliar, and unknown, but none of that equaled fear. It was uncomfortable, unfamiliar and unknown, but not fearful. So as I started to kind of come back down, I raised my hand for another shot and they give you the shot in the other arm, but you hardly feel it. So I kind of want to explain what it feels like when you first feel the medicine hit. Okay, so they give you the shot in the one arm. And at first, when it first went in, I kind of like looked over, I like lifted my mask up and looked over at Michael like, oh my God, what did we just do? Like, there's no going back. This is the point when you know there's no going back. You have signed up for the experience and you're going to have it, whether you like it or not, the medicine cannot come back out. So there's this a little moment of panic, and then really quickly I settled into the reality. And the reality is this thing is going and I'm about to blast off, so I might as well just get comfortable here. And I just tried to get into a state of gratitude and stay open and allow whatever came to me to come and keep my mantras in mind, repeat them, and kind of calm myself and be there for myself, knowing I was completely safe on the outside. So it takes a couple minutes for the medicine to kind of kick in, and you kind of start to feel yourself get a little bit high, like on pain meds kind of. I'm not a huge pain meds person. I don't actually take pain meds anymore. But when I did, like the last time I think that I did was when I had my twins. And when I did take those pain meds, that's similar to the feeling. And then what you feel is this, what I think is the best part of the whole thing. And that is this stretch, okay? So it feels like, imagine that your body is a piece of banana Laffy Taffy, which is the superior flavor of Laffy Taffy, if you don't know. So imagine that you're this piece of long Laffy Taffy. I'm talking about the big one, right? And you can grab both sides and you can stretch it, right? And it feels like it kind of gets thinner in the center and it pulls outward, and you could pull it out for like a couple of feet before it broke. That is what it feels like, only in your body. It's like someone grabs a hold of your head and grabs a hold of your feet and lifts you about 2 feet off the ground from where you're laying and then stretches you to about 8 feet long. So I am hovering 2 feet above where my body should be. And I know this because I try to put my hand down on myself and it's not where you think it's going to be. You have to go further down to find your body. And then where you think your head should be, it's like 2 feet above it and like stretched out a little bit. Like you feel like an avatar. And that's really the only way that I can explain that stretch feeling, but the stretch feels so good. This disconnection from your body feels so good. And I can understand why people would want to use this medicine as a medication to avoid feeling, to not feel something, to feel something other than what they feel when they're not on it. I can understand it. I can understand why it's a street drug. I can understand the appeal, all of that, because it really is a relief experience. And so since I was going in to use this as a medicine, not use it to run away, but use it to actually feel something, I got my intention. Whatever it is that you choose to do with this medicine, you're gonna get. And so the stretch feels really, really good. And then I just felt kind of like free to like search around, and I didn't see anything in front of me. It was like, I didn't see a bunch of like rainbow unicorns, and I didn't see a Pegasus flying through the sky, and I didn't see space. It was like I was seeing with my feelings without my mind becoming an impediment. My mind was not inserting thoughts for me. I had to intentionally think the thoughts and then use the mind to produce an answer, which is just a beautiful feeling. It's a beautiful feeling to have that chatter stop. The doom and gloom, or the this isn't going to be okay, and the fear kind of falls aside. It's like you don't have access to that when you're in this place. And I felt like I was just getting really honest answers from myself without all this emotional connection to the things I perceive I care about in the real world. It was a really beautiful experience. It feels really good. You start to feel it. Once you get up to the top, you get to this peak experience, you can start to feel yourself pretty quickly coming back down. And I knew, oh no, I got to go again because there's something in here for me. And now that I know that it's not scary, I don't have to worry about what's going to come popping out of me like a horror movie. then I need more of this. I want to sit here and get as much as I can out of it. And so my first experience was really kind of just getting used to it. And I did completely let go. And I did remember that I'm worthy of any insight. And I was reminded of stuff from when I was really little that I forgot about. And I was loving towards myself. And I was worthy of the insights that I got. And I did remember that all the answers are inside of me because everything did feel familiar. The answers that I got, I already knew. I was aware that I already knew that. I was just being reminded.
So tell us how you felt after the session. A lot of that is in the highlights, so you can just briefly touch on that. And then being that you had such a beautiful experience the first session and you weren't scared anymore, or I guess I'm assuming that you weren't scared anymore for the second session. What was that like going into the second session? Were you seeking anything different? Were you trying to do this session differently? Or, you know, what was that like having such a great experience by the first one?
Yeah, so there was some difference between the prep for session one and the prep for session two. And I think the biggest game changer of the whole thing is just that I had experience. I now had a lived experience through ketamine that proved to me that I did not need to be afraid, that my fears were unfounded. Of course they fucking were. And that I didn't need to be fearful of this, that it was really coming alongside me to help me, not to hurt me, right? And I had been taught all my whole life, hey, drugs are meant to hurt you, don't do drugs. And I think that would have been better for me had it been, don't do drugs to escape your life. Maybe if the caveat had been, don't do drugs in order to not live. Maybe that would have been better advice for my mom, but can't go back and change it now. So I think I was taught to be afraid, and I was that until I had experienced the other direction, and then I wasn't so afraid anymore. So the leading up to the next week was a lot easier mentally. It was less taxing. I was less tired. I was less fearful. I was kind of ready. I was ready to go again, see what I saw, feel what I felt, feel like what it felt like to get a little bit more. Because on my next session, I took more, right? So I started with, like I said, 45 and 50 milligrams. And on the second session, I got 60 milligrams the first time, and then another 60 milligrams the second time. And then on my third, I'll just tell you now, on my third session, I had 75 milligrams at first and then a 70 booster. So it moved up a little bit more each time I went in, and I had a little bit more intense experience each time I went in. I think that's by design. The music changed every single time, and then the come down took a little bit longer each time. One thing I didn't mention in the last question that I should have was what the come down feels like. If you're going to do ketamine, do not schedule anything the day that you do it. You will not feel like doing it. So I couldn't wait when I got done with the session to be able to get up and get out of there, because you just kind of want to be home because you're so tired. It's taxing on your body and your mind to do this stuff. It's a lot to metabolize this kind of medicine in your body. And so it takes a lot out of you to do it. So I just wanted to come home and rest. I wanted to lay down and close my eyes and rest and then wake up refreshed. And that's exactly what happens. So you get into the car, I kind of felt a little bit nauseous. The more medicine that was in my body, the more nauseous I felt. I even gagged on the last one when we were going down an elevator. I was like, okay, this is too much. I'm going to be sick in this elevator. But I held it in. I was able to get to the car, and then I kind of leaned back in the car seat, turned on the air conditioned full blast on my face, and kind of just tried to go inside of myself and just make it home. And then I would get in my bed, I would drink an entire bottle of cold water, and then I would kind of pass out for a few hours. But when I woke up, I felt so good. Like, if you go back and watch the highlights after my first ketamine session, you can actually see a noticeable difference in the way that I am talking, the excitement level, the energy level that I had tapped into. Like, I felt so good. I felt almost high without being on any medicine. So that feeling, that's the truth. Just like the feeling of not giving a fuck is the truth. That is the truth. That's the way that it's supposed to be. I know that. I know that I know that not giving a fuck about what other people think is the truth. That is how we are meant to live. It's just we're conditioned otherwise. The same thing for this. Like, it is the truth to feel this energy body. It is truth to know that we have access to that in this life. And I think that comes once we can move past our conditioning, once we move out of this state of making choices based on what we think is going to keep us safe, or making choices based on how we were raised, or making choices based on what we were told is true about the world, and what is true about us. When we can finally find that version of us, I think we start to have access to this energy body. And I felt it after ketamine. I've been told that ketamine is like putting a fresh blanket of snow down on your mind, where every thought that we think becomes a ditch that we're digging. Like, imagine that you have a shovel, and every time you think a thought, you dig down and you dig a ditch into your mind. And then what we also know is that 95% of the thoughts that we have by the time we're 35 are the same as the day before. So that means that we're digging these really deep ditches of thought. And every time we think it, it just gets a little bit deeper, which means that the water flows through it so much easier, right? Like, it's going to flow through a deep ditch easier than something that is not as deep and maybe could spread out a little bit more. Well, I mean, I felt like I had like oceans of water running through some of these thought processes that I had. And ketamine has the ability to kind of throw down a fresh blanket of snow over those ditches. And then you can redig the ditches that you want to keep. You can take advantage of what science calls neuroplasticity, which is just your mind's ability to adapt and learn and to grow. And so this neuroplasticity allows us to identify thoughts that aren't working for us, that are not ours, that are not supposed to be ours, that we're continuing to identify with, and rethink something else in its place. And you do that so many times that this becomes the mode of thought that you have, rather than this one that was created for you, or was created for you to understand and then overcome, is what I actually believe. So I felt that neuroplasticity in action during these three ketamine experiences. And that made me feel excited about continuing to go. It made me feel excited about showing up to the counseling sessions that I had between, because when you sign up for ketamine, you also get a counselor to actually walk you through it. So I met with my counselor before my sessions, and then in between each session, and then after, to help me come up with a plan so that I can integrate all of this stuff that I saw, the things that I felt, the ways that I feel like I had gotten some downloads, and I can actually integrate them into my life now that I have this fresh blanket of snow down. That is also the truth. I feel it. I have the experiential knowledge of knowing and feeling that that is the truth about this medicine. And so those things did make me feel different about going the next week and being excited to get there, even though the recovery is hard. You know, coming home and scheduling off 2 days where you're not doing anything stressful and you're trying not to let all of the things that are inevitably going to come into your life get you down, right? Oh, I'm trying to concentrate on staying positive right now because I'm about to have this really intense experience. And of course, don't you know that everything's going to show up to your doorstep when that stuff happens to test you? Is this really what you want? Are you really going to do this? Are you really going to set this down? Are you really going to come back to it afterwards? And I was able to prove myself that yes, I am able to do that. I am going to take some time for myself. I am going to concentrate on my own healing here. And I think ketamine was a great way for me to do that. So yeah, I did do that a little bit differently the next time, especially in my mindset. It was just easier for me to get into this positive, curious mindset without the fear that may hold me back from actually pressing the go button.
That's awesome. So having such a positive experience with this now, is there anything that you would do differently if you went back? I'm thinking particularly if you're giving advice to somebody who is wanting to try this for the first time. And then the second part of that question is it on the table for you again? And if so, would you do it differently the second time than you did the first?
Yes, it's definitely on the table for me going forward. I haven't done more than my three sessions because I kind of switched gears into thinking solely about ayahuasca. And then I was like, okay, well, maybe when I come back, that will be something that's on the table. No. I had to sit in my ayahuasca journey for a real long time. I had to sit in those ceremonies for a real long time to be able to put all the pieces together. And still, it's 6 months out from that. I still don't have all the pieces together from that one. I have no category for what I felt during ayahuasca. And so, yeah, it's definitely on the table for me. I felt like it was profound and life-changing and kicked my ass directly out of this rut that I felt like, this stuck feeling that I was in. And I know that that's on the table for me should that happen again. Now, I have also some curiosity around doing stuff like Cambo and Hoppe, which are other psychedelics. I've got, you know, those things are coming to me now, right? So you start down this road and then all of a sudden one thing leads to the next. And I've got my neighbor who's like, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm, you know, she's a shaman and she does all of these ceremonies. Hey, come on over. We could do this stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that's on the table for me now that I would never say no to. I'm not sure when the right time is going to be to say yes to that. I feel like that will come to me. I'm not here trying to open any of these doors. I feel like the door is going to open for me and I can choose to step through it or not. So yeah, ketamine's definitely on the table for me in the future, should I ever have the need for it. And I would definitely go back to Enlighten. This is not sponsored in any way. I haven't even told her that I'm going to do this. I just think that she deserves the recognition for the practice that she's putting out there right now. It's really a beautiful thing. What would I do differently? There is one thing that I would do differently. I went in curious and looking forward with my mind's eye. So I was actually looking for a visual experience when I went into both ketamine and ayahuasca. What I expected was something visual. So I felt like I was looking, even though my eyes were closed and it was dark during ketamine, I was looking with my eye. What am I going to see? And I did see some like colors at one point in the second session, and the third session, I saw some blues and some greens, but mostly I felt like I was all alone in this huge expansive room with a lot of darkness. Like one point I even felt like I was looking through the fibers of my mask, and I probably was looking with that eye, trying to see what I could see. Going back the next time, rather than looking with my mind's eye, I would be looking with my feelings eye. It's almost looking with the heart. What could I feel here? What is there for me to feel in this space? Because really all of my big insights were little things that I felt, that I had felt in the past, that maybe were a little bit uncomfortable, especially when I was younger. There was a lot of stuff that I felt and experienced when I was younger that was really, really uncomfortable for me, and it made me scared. And I would pray it away. Oh God, please don't let me have this dream again. I really don't want to feel like this again. It affects my whole day. It makes me dysregulated. And I didn't have any words for that or categories. And I didn't have an adult that I could talk to about it because I wasn't supposed to feel feelings with my mom. So I felt really unsafe with my dreams and with my visions that I was having when I was younger. And I prayed it away. And of course, what I wanted, I got. There was years in my life where I did not have dreams, where I didn't remember them, where I wasn't conscious to them. And that was by design. That was because that's what I wanted. I was afraid of what I was seeing because it was so uncomfortable and I didn't know how to deal with it then. But I know how to deal with it now. I'm ready to face it now. Therefore, I have to recall all of this stuff that I wished away when I was a kid. And we are incredibly powerful beings. What we ask for, we will get. What we're willing to lean into, we will get. And that has been true for me. So next time I will go in with my feelings eye, the eye of the heart, rather than the eye of the mind, because the mind becomes the tool. It's not where it's at. The information is in the heart. It's in the feelings. It's in what your body remembers. And so I think that disconnection from the mind and the body allows that stuff to come out without the mind scaring us or interpreting it or identifying with any of it. None of that is me. It's just the experience that I'm having here, and I'm ready for the first time to actually deal with that. So when I go back next time, that is the change that I will make. It's just a difference of lens. It's almost like putting on a different pair of glasses, going in to look in a different way, to extract information, to extract feelings that I can then go and integrate into my life. It's a shadow that I'm not seeing that's being brought back up. I can shine my light on it and then transmute that into something really, really beautiful. And I think that was the number one thing that ketamine did for me, was allow me to re-feel some stuff and transmute it into something that is beautiful and is not scary and can be interpreted in a totally new way by me. And I don't have to identify with that anymore. And again, if you want more details, there's a lot more content and details about this for you on my social media. I hope you'll go and find that if you're looking for it, if you're thinking about doing this. I hope you'll take it all in, knowing it's just my experience. It does not anybody else's experience, and in no way guarantee that this is going to be your experience. I'm not suggesting that everyone should do this. I think that this is one of those things that's going to come for you. If it's the right thing, you're going to have that knowing inside of you. Check in with yourself. This is what I'm thinking. How do I feel about this? Check in with your gut. Check in with your heart. What does it say? I would try to eliminate asking your mind what you should do, because the mind, I think, is a liar. I think your mind will present you with a lot of really scary things where it doesn't need to be like that. My mind scared the bejesus out of me walking into this experience. And now that I've done it, I know that my mind was just lying to me, and I had to get through that door in order to know it. So I hope that this will open that door just a little bit, and then you can choose to walk through it if you feel like this is going to be the thing for you. For me, it certainly was an experience I will never, ever, ever forget. And I hope that it will be the same for you if you ever choose to do it. Next week, we are going to be talking about my ayahuasca experience. I'm very excited to talk about that. A little bit nervous as well, because again, the words are going to fail. I would love to be able to take you and show you a video of everything that I saw and felt so that you could actually understand it. But I realize that's not the whole point. The point is that we each do it for ourselves and then make those connections ourselves. But I am really excited to talk about it and give you guys all the details about it, because I find it to be really, really interesting. I loved being able to do this alongside a group of other beautiful people and hear about their experiences with ayahuasca. I'm not going to be telling you any of their experiences. That's not my story to tell, but I will tell you mine, and I will try to get Michael to tell you his. Recently, he's been a little bit more quiet about his story because people always want to give you their opinion after you talk about it. They want to tell you what all of it means and tell you what their experience was like, or they want to tell you how someone they know shit their pants when they did ayahuasca. And when you're trying to integrate what you saw, that's just not, that is not conducive to a healing environment. And so he's been kind of quiet about it lately. I'm never going to push him to do it, but I think that, I think he will. I think he will come and at least tell you guys a portion of what it was that he experienced, if nothing else, just to kind of take some of the mystery and the fear out of that experience that can be really mysterious and really scary. So I hope that you will tune in for that episode as well, and we will see you then.